Yeah, don't get us wrong. There's still going to be plenty of randomness to the show.
Of course, that's the name football, of the show. The other name is Off Topic.
But this is football.
What you want, we've got in my definition. But it makes your rage glisten. Our voice is about the games. And you know, we talk about the latest goings. More so than any other. And our Mountain West matters. Well, will you? You listen to this podcast too. And you rant about this podcast too. Just a side where Jeremy analyzes some matches and kiss the grin the bridges. We do some good interviews. And you know, from Fresno all the way to Boise, from Logan down to Esty, they're calling out our name. Where will you? You listen to this podcast too. And you love this podcast too.
Welcome back to the latest, we're back, football. Mountain West Connection is our website, mwcconnection.com. We're going to recap a couple of bowl games, a couple of New Year's polls that ended that we have placed on our website. Check us out. Subscribe to us. I'd like a subscription through iTunes. That's not too much hard. Or Stitcher. Or go to Blog Talk Radio and subscribe. But Twitter, mwcconnection, we passed 2,900 likes on Facebook.
Very nice, very nice.
It's Matt Kennelly there, Jeremy Moss here. We're going to recap some games, go over some polls, and talk about maps, maybe. You guys like your maps, apparently.
Apparently, yeah.
We'll just start with that. That was a complete joke because Matt Miller Bleacher Report, which we're giving him more pub than he probably deserves, loves Josh Allen, and that's an understatement. Mm-hmm. If you haven't heard, he has him as the number one quarterback overall, number three pick overall for a guy who hasn't even declared for the NFL draft.
Yeah, that's a little much.
And won't declare for the NFL draft. I'm going to say it now.
I would probably be with you there. I think there's just, you know, we're a Mountain West site, right? And obviously we've both been pleasantly surprised by how Wyoming did this year. And we're going to talk about the Poinsettia Bowl in a little bit, but If you take a look at the big picture, it doesn't really make a lot of sense other than saying that, you know, forecasting anybody to be a top five pick means that they have to have like a significant amount of talent. Like, and you know, quarterbacks, you know, in the NFL especially, it's kind of a quarterback needy league at this point. So
yeah, desperate.
On some level, you know, on the you know, if you're trying to really stretch, I guess it makes sense. But you're talking about putting him ahead of guys like Deshaun Watson, who's been a multi-year starter at a Power 5 team.
Playing back-to-back national title.
National championships. Like, who else declared for the draft at this point? Or who else is going to be in the picture?
We should have looked that up. But I'm going to say, we should look this stuff up. Is Davis Webb going to be for the draft, I'm assuming? Cal quarterback?
The guy from North Carolina, Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah, Mitch Trubisky. Also, Patrick Mahomes from Texas Tech declared recently.
Okay.
And whatever you want to say about Texas Tech QBs, they sling the ball and they'll get picked up because of what they've done in that system.
Yeah.
But there's
Brad
Cotton, number one of
Miami. Yeah.
Yeah, he declared. Let's see here. I'm looking at his top whatever. Yeah. Here's what he has right now. This is weird. Like, I'm going for his full mock draft. They kind of updated a little bit. Mm-hmm. Who did this? Matt Miller changed his top 25 on January 3rd, which was
yesterday. For those who aren't listening right away.
Yeah, it's we're recording July, January 4th. So he had, I know big boards are different than draft picks because team need and everything.
Yeah.
But you would think if you have Josh Allen, number 3 overall to the Bears, he's probably your number 1 quarterback, right? Regardless?
I would think so, yeah.
So Mitch Trubisky of UNC, number 10 overall player.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Allen, number 17, so there's that.
Mm-hmm.
Changing your mock drafts and this stuff every 5 seconds is pointless, in my opinion.
I mean, mock drafts as an exercise are kind of pointless. So, you know, I think they mostly exist for the page clicks, especially at this point.
That's why Dan Cador for mockingthedraft.com, well, you can still type that in and it'll get to where you want to go, did a 1-round mock draft of all SEC players.
Yeah, I mean, but he kind of, you know, he fiddles with it every so often. What was interesting to me is he had another one recently.
The two-rounder.
And there were, like, I think there was maybe Corey Davis from the Group of Five, and that was it. Which, realistically, is probably closer to the actual scenario you're gonna see once we actually get around to the draft.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. Like, he played pretty well in the Cotton Bowl event once he finally got going versus Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, like, going back to Josh Allen, there's one reason why he should go to the NFL. And let me go back up what you said before. Like, you have to have significant talent for, like, a one-year guy. He's played 1 year and, like, a couple games last year.
Mm-hmm.
He went to junior college before. And I guess we'll get to the map thing in a minute here. We'll circle back to it. But there are a few reasons why he should go. Because Brian Hill declared for the draft, which we haven't announced since our last show, which you should know. His center, who's going to be drafted, Roulier, is going to be picked up somewhere. Mm-hmm. His top three receivers are gone as well. So there is there can be an argument to be made where his stats could be worse, more experienced receiver, less experienced receivers, new running back, a different center, which is a big deal. That's the only argument I can make, or I could see if he goes, that's a good reason to go, because I know scouts don't look at numbers and everything as much as what you can do, but if he has a poor year and goes 15 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, completes 52%, that's a pretty big drop-off.
Yeah, I mean, the way that I look at it is, I mean, I don't know about you, if you're an avid reader of Football Outsiders or anything like that.
Sometimes.
Well, you know, they have the quarterback projections that they do yearly, and I forget all of the factors that go into it. I believe it's called QBase at this point.
Is it NFL or college?
It's for college quarterbacks going into the NFL draft. They project them 5 years out. Using, okay, you know, different factors to kind of gauge how good they think quarterbacks are going to be. And you can look that up. They publish those over on ESPN and on footballoutsiders.com and stuff like that. But the two things that have always stuck out to me, and the two things that I think are the reasons why Allen shouldn't declare for the draft, career starts matter.
Yeah, he's what, 14, right? 15?
And Allen has approximately 1 year's worth of starts under his belt.
Well, he started 2 games last year, didn't he, I think?
Yeah.
That's before he got hurt.
But college experience, the number of games that you play matter.
Mm-hmm.
And completion percentage in college matters, too. And when you compare Allen to a lot of the other guys who are coming out in this draft, like Chad Kelly, for instance, had a 62.5% completion rate. You know, trying to look up. Trubisky was at 68%. You know, Deshaun
Baker Washington. Mayfield, 70%. Luke Falk, 70%. Zach Terrell, 70%.
Yeah. Josh Allen, 89th in the country at 56%.
Not good enough.
And that's not to say that, you know, college quarterbacks can't succeed, but, you know, go back to a guy like, and I hate to bring it up, but go back to a guy like Kyle Buller back in the day. You know, he was a big guy, strong arm, not very accurate, and, you know, the Ravens took a chance on him in the first round, and he was never more than erratic in his time in the NFL. And I feel like if Allen jumps out now and goes to the pros, that's the kind of career he's going to have ahead of him. That's why I think that even despite the fact that they're losing a lot of other skill position players in Laramie, it's going to be better for him in the long run, I think.
For sure.
To just get more experience, take that next step forward, and basically be the guy to help Wyoming stay competitive.
And it's also, look at Brett Smith. When he left before Craig Bull came in, former Wyoming QB, I could say he's a similar player to Josh Allen for the most part. Similar, he'd be athletic, force stuff, have a pretty big arm. I think he either got drafted later, UDFA, by the Bucks, ended up in the CFL, and he could have stayed another year. But there's reasons the hype is there. It's because Carson Wentz and Craig Bohl were coached together, played together at North Dakota State. Not very long, because this is Bohl's third year, but... And also, here's the thing, like, that's kind of overblown in my opinion as well, because Wentz was injured, and he grew, like, 50 pounds and 6 inches after high school. So it's like, come on.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what... That's what Josh Allen did, too, but, you know...
Yeah. What's the city called? Fireborn?
Fireball.
Fireball, which didn't Jeff Tedford mention that in his press conference?
Barco.
We're not losing.
The opening press conference.
Oh, Barco? Yeah.
Yeah,
that map I played was funny.
Carson Wentz cracked 60% in each of his 2 years as a starter at North Dakota State, which, granted, you still have to kind of curve a little bit for the FCS competition, but regardless, like, they're similarly built, I think, but, you know, staying in school, being a full-time starter in North Dakota State really helped Wentz, and I feel like it will help Allen in the same way.
Yeah, and then there's the, like, he has the size, but here's what I'd point to people. Go watch the fourth quarter of the Nebraska game where he had 4 turnovers, 3 picks, and a fumble. Mm-hmm. Watch the San Diego State late in the game where he tries to force on a 3rd and long, fumbles it, trying to extend for the first down. Look at the Eastern Michigan game where he forces a pass as well, or he tries to do a flip over the end zone to get a touchdown, which he's short.
Yeah.
He has tendencies, but, like, I believe, let me pull it up here really quick. I believe in 2 games he had 4 versus Nebraska, including 5 versus Nebraska, including a pick 6, but he had 4 multi-interception games.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, we know he's going to probably be a good athlete, but it's like, he's not going to declare. Like, that's my, like, I'm stretching. When I say he should go because talent's leaving, that's like me, like, the only logical reason, but even then I'm not confident. And, like, he's not going to go number 3 overall. He would be lucky to be, honestly, I think if he were to go this year, he'd be lucky to be a 6th-round pick. And so, whatever. And then you got, like I said, Brian Hill's going for the draft. Jeremy McNichols, Boise State, to the draft. But it's just, I had to put something out there. And then I had a guy, I'm not going to say who it was or whatever, but he DM'd me. He's like, who the hell is this Matt Miller guy? He knows nothing. I know a guy who basically is perfect in the draft. Like, he's so good. He's so good in the draft. Like, yeah, you need to cover something else, essentially, because you're too good at getting picks and knowing who he knows. So it's like, I know he's not, like, he does a decent job, Matt Miller does, like a lot of guys do, but come on, he's just doing it to what we're doing right now.
If you're going to read anybody at Bleacher Report, just do yourself a favor and make sure it's Mike Tenier. That's all I'm going to say.
I have not read Mike Tenier. What does he do over there?
He does, you know, a little bit of smarmy analysis and stuff like that. He's a good writer. I'd try.
Mike Freeman's pretty good NFL guy.
Him too.
I would say Michael Felder, but now he does just video, but that's good to watch too, so... All right, if you can follow him on Twitter in the Bleachers, where you can get Top Chef, Flipping Houses. If you want to get your fix for HGTV, follow in the Bleachers, because that's what Michael Felder tweets all day. Besides college football, all right, let's get to our big thing we discussed before: Player of the Year within the conference and Player of the Year within the pros.
Mm-hmm.
So you go ahead and take this because you did this for the second year in a format where you cannot hijack the poll.
Yeah, so thank you to everybody, first of all. If you were listening and you voted in the poll, I appreciate your input. If you didn't, then I'm very disappointed in all of you.
Me too.
But, yeah, actually, it was a little, you know, nobody was able to hijack the poll this time around. Last year, I think Larry
Aggie fans
with like 1 million votes or something like that.
Woohoo!
No, I mean it was interesting though, because somehow like the college vote got about 20 more responses than the pro vote did, and I'm not sure why that is.
Well, I can tell you why.
But why is that?
People come to the site for college stuff. Some people may not care about pro guys when they leave.
Yeah, that's true.
From their respective schools. So, but that's also only 20 votes. It's not that many either.
But what I will say is that in both instances, you know, if you are a San Diego State fan, you should give yourself a pat on the back, because Aztecs fans came out in force compared to pretty much everybody else in the conference. Like, Utah State had a lot of fans that voted. You know, Boise also had a lot of fans that voted. Everybody else has a lot of work to do. But no sense in keeping everybody in suspense. I'll start with the pro one. There was about, you know, there were 96 responses in all. And actually, the top two were separated by a total of one vote.
Let me guess the top two.
Okay.
Derek Carr and Kawhi Leonard.
You would be correct. And they and combined, the two of them got about half the total votes.
That's a tough one to do because, like, going through, like, J.J. came on strong the second half of the Dolphins. Mm-hmm. We had a couple 200-yard games. I think by the time you wrote this, you actually had a third 200-yard game the day after.
Yeah.
During that week, Ryan Moore was a pretty solid pick, too, the former UNLV golfer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want dunks, you go Larry Nance, but... It has to be. I don't know. Bobby Wagner, didn't he lead the NFL in tackles this year, I believe?
Bobby Wagner, I believe he did, and he was also third in the voting, and Ajayi was fourth.
Okay. So the winner, I'm assuming from what you said, is Kawhi Leonard.
You would be wrong.
What? Derek Carr?
Derek Carr.
Wow.
So, you know, if anybody out there knows Derek Carr, you can tell him this, like, a little consolation prize for breaking
the leg. I need to get some Photoshop skills and fax it to the Raiders organization
exactly.
Or something. They're in the playoffs this week. They're playing my Houston Texans. So with their man, if they had him, they'd beat the Texans for sure. They're going with their third stringer, rookie Connor Cook from Michigan State. Mm-hmm. But what did he break? His fibula or his tibia or both? Or
I believe it was his fibula.
Broken leg, essentially. And I think had he not broken the leg in that week, he may have won MVP for NFL. Because he missed the final two games.
I think even the fact that they got stomped by Denver so badly is another argument for his MVP.
Yeah, so that's a... And I guess with part of it, too, you do this in December, January. Football's in full swing. And let NBAs just get going. Nobody cares too much until the Christmas Day games. But I know Spurs didn't make the finals last year. But those are the best players. Like, that's a... I'm sort of shocked because... Leonard gets a lot of pub, but Derek Carr is not sneaky good, but really good. And I think being the voting taking place during NFL season kind of helped him a bit.
Yeah, probably.
All right, so let's go to the college side. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
As for our college athlete of the year vote, there were...
Wait, hold on. Who got last? Oh, let me guess. Let me see. Was it the Stephen Wright?
Let's see. There
I'm just
was
curious.
Wilbur Quinn got one vote. Trying to figure out who this is right here. Actually, Ryan Moore, like you mentioned, got one vote. Stephen Wright got one vote. Trying to look. Carlos Torres got none votes.
You want to know what I honestly think? I think just... I voted more than once, so I apologize for doing that. But I actually think I may have been that one Ryan Moore vote. I mean, I can vote more than one. Man, because think about it. You win the Ryder Cup. That's a pretty big deal in almost a decade.
Yeah.
Finished top 10 nine times. Come on. And it's individual sport more than anything else. So I don't know if I did, but I think I may. Or maybe I thought really hard about it. That's a pretty big deal. He's the only player on this list is not a team sport guy.
Yes.
All right, so let's go to the college side here.
Okay, so 115 responses, same kind of deal. San Diego State fans dominated the voting. And actually, this one was not quite as close. if you want to take a stab at who the winner was.
Yeah, obviously Pumphrey.
Donnell Pumphrey was the runaway winner with almost 40% of the vote.
Number two, I guess it has to be McNichols.
It was McNichols.
Okay. I'm guessing then Brian Hill, then probably Jalen Moore. Then where did Griffin Jacks come in?
Griffin Jacks was fourth.
Okay. Wait, so he was ahead of Brian Hill?
No, he was behind Brian Hill.
Oh, that is, never mind, that's four. Sorry, I was thinking of one other.
The big three running backs, Pumphrey, McNichols, Brian Hill, were one, two, and three.
Okay, sorry, San Jose State, only Kenny Potter was available. He didn't have a great year, but that's good stuff. And then, like honestly, like go to UNLV again. Their soccer player, Lily Sender, had a huge year. First team All-American. She argued, like, if you look at, I know the popularity of sport really matters, but if you look at what they did individually and not going career with Pumphrey, She probably had the best season out of any of these players.
Well, either that or someone like Ellen Nystrom, who actually came in fifth with 7% of the vote, 8 votes overall. So good for her.
Yeah, it's a good fun thing to do because there's more sports than football. We do a little baseball, but it's good exercise, good New Year stuff to go through and reminisce who was really good, because that Rams team, 31-1 last year.
Yeah,
pretty good.
Can't forget that.
Yeah, pretty amazing. All right, so should we get to the games that people already heard about and whatever we'll talk about anyways?
Let's do it.
All right, so we'll go way in the Wayback Machine pre-Christmas into one of the 4 days of the year it rains in San Diego. And not just rains, we had a freaking monsoon out there at Qualcomm. Brigham Young University versus the Wyoming Cowboys. And you want to point to another reason why Josh Allen needs another year? His game-stealing interception. He had two players open, one for a touchdown.
Yeah, that was not his best decision. He could have checked down or at least run out of bounds or something like that. And he tried to make something happen where there wasn't anything to happen. And that's kind of what happens when you do that.
Yeah, I watched that play a few times. There's a guy over the top. Mm-hmm. But also after watching it like 3 or 4 times, if you look to the right sideline, whoever was guarding the tight end had their back towards the tight end. And so they could have slung it to the sideline for like 15 yards. But so that's how the game ended, interception. But in a monsoon, Wyoming missed a pair of field goals early on, which was the big deal. They had the – no, we did miss one field goal, correct? Yeah, one field goal, the punt. The rain, the punt bobbles off the guy's head. And then instead of trying to kick out of bounds or whatever, doing what he can for 2 points, falls on the 2-yard line and then – BYU scores because Jabal Williams is a pretty good running back, 210 yards.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, most of that is a credit to Jabal Williams. I think some of that maybe is the fact that, you know, we've talked about in the last several weeks that Wyoming's front four especially was really beat up. And I think that it was kind of telling because of the fact they only managed 2 tackles for loss, period. And they only had 1 sack courtesy of Kevin Prosser. They just really weren't able to get a lot of push up front. And, you know, Jamal Williams more than made up for the fact that Tanner Mangum basically couldn't throw the ball at all.
He made so many bad throws and got so lucky in this game.
Yeah.
That one that bobbles off 3 players and then they catch it in the end zone. He lost the ball up. That could have been interception. I know it's his first start, but and I know it's raining, but he made some poor throws.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, like, watch this game. Like, why does it Wyoming? Because, you know, Tanner Mangum, he played last year, but first start, you have Jamal Williams back there. Wyoming's missing DJ May, Appleby, and, Granderson. Why wouldn't they bring up another guy or two and make the new quarterback beat you and bring up more guys? You have Andrew Wingard in the back secondary. He's pretty good. Bring up more guys to stop the run. And let Mangum beat you to pass, because obviously, outside of one throw, I think he had what a long of a... He had a 39-yarder to Nick Kurtz where he dove and caught it, but besides that, not much is going on, and Kurtz had to make a pretty good play to get that ball.
Yeah, that's true. He only had 2 passes more than 15 yards. When you compare that to what they were doing on the ground, you know, Jamal Williams had 6 runs of more than 10 yards, including that touchdown he had in the third quarter.
I just wish this game was better weather. Because when it stopped raining, you could actually see what Josh Allen could do in this Wyoming offense. And part of it, yes, BYU had a player out for, I think it was a Micah Hanneman, I want to say, for targeting in this game. And when he left, it hurt their secondary, which is already a little bit young for BYU. But had there been no rain, like, I know it's not dumb to say, but, like, I want to see football. I get it, snow games, rain games can be fun, but then it's also usually a poor product of the game where Wyoming fumbles the snap on a field goal, the punt we mentioned, just the bobbled ball in the end zone, or just weird stuff happens in the rain. And so, like, I wish it would have been a better game because Wyoming, they made a big comeback, and people are like, oh, BYU's playing easy, they're up. Like, they weren't up that big. They weren't winning, like, by 3 touchdowns at any point in this game.
That's true, and especially when you consider that, you know, Josh Allen was more or less held in check in the first half. But in the fourth quarter especially, that was when he really came to life. You know, they had 4 passes. I think all of them were more than 20 yards. And he threw for 125 yards total in the fourth quarter. And, you know, if it weren't for that last bad decision, it could have been a totally different story.
Yeah, it's just again, part of it was that BYU player getting kicked out of the game, but it's like they couldn't stop Gentry in the second half. You knew they'd break through, but it's, Brian Hill didn't have the best game either. Only had 90, ran as much as he could, but only had like 3.5 yards to carry.
Yeah,
and then BYU's defense, they got to Allen a little bit, one TFL and or three TFLs in a sack. They were just BYU got lucky, but they were beneficial in a couple parts of this game, because if you think about it, this could have been the complete opposite for Wyoming. Say Wyoming punched the ball off, no score happens.
Mm-hmm.
That's 7 points there. Wyoming, even if Wyoming makes the field goal, could have been over. To, it'd be a different game. They could have lined up for a game-winning field goal late in the game.
Yeah.
And then the ball that bounces off five players, it seems like, in a touchdown. So, but BYU did play much better in the first half, I'll say, than Wyoming, because they played in the same scenario, same rain, same weather. Jamal Williams got it done. Brian Hill did not. And so it's like you play with what you have in the running game, and offensive line was much better for BYU.
Yeah, hard to argue.
All right, now let's move on to the next game. This is like 2 weeks ago almost. So we're way behind here. All right, so what was our next game? We going to the Cactus Bowl?
We have to talk about the Cactus Bowl.
No, actually, excuse me. Famous Idaho Potato Ice Rink Bowl.
Oh, yes.
111 points. And can I give you a... Hold on. A good round of applause. Do you know why I'm doing that?
I do not.
You better.
I'm doing that.
You said for the Idaho Smack Talk, they're going to drop a 50 burger on Idaho.
Oh, yeah.
And they got 50 points in a losing effort.
I did not think that they were going to drop 61 on Colorado State, though.
Yeah, that's the thing. They got 50.
I mean, where do you start with this game? Is it the fact that it seemed like one team really wanted to be there and the other team didn't?
Here's a couple things that might be conspiracy theory, but Idaho's never won. I don't think they've ever won on the blue turf, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And they get to show up Boise State. Because this was, in fact, the last time they'll be playing on that field ever. Because they're dropping down to FCS in 2018. And Boise wants nothing to do with him at all. And so they wanted to show up the Broncos. I don't know. It's just a weird game because it was 0-0 in the first half. That's the other game. Idaho got out to a 41-14 lead.
Yeah, that was an ass kicking if there ever was one. and I mean, because they weren't able to really get a lot of traction on offense, and then what was, because
they kept falling.
Yeah. What really surprised me though is that, you know, they didn't have an answer for Idaho's running game. Like,
no.
Yeah, Isaiah Saunders ended up running for almost 150 yards and 3 touchdowns, and it seemed like, you know, he wasn't necessarily flashy, but he was getting yards almost at will, it seemed.
Well, even their Aaron Duckworth had 60 yards on 6 carries, just about.
Yeah.
I don't think, because they were missing McKenzie, and I don't think that was a big too much of a loss, mm-hmm. because Dawkins rated very well. They're just down so much he had couldn't play enough. 16 for 118. Izzy Matthews 10 for 29. I don't know if McKenzie would have, or it's McKenzie, right?
Marvin Kinsey.
Sorry, I got M. Kenzie with the ACL tear. He didn't play, but I don't know if he would have been there. It'd be a difference. Look at the freaking defense, Rams. You allowed Matt Linehan to throw for 381 yards, 12 yards an attempt.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not only that, but the fact that, you know, Colorado State on their first drive, they turn it over on downs, and then,
yeah,
you know, even when they were scoring almost at will late, they had, you know, 3 more turnovers. Like, they had an interception, you know, that wasted a pretty good opportunity near midfield, and then they had the fumble, which, you know, Idaho was able to turn that into an easy touchdown, and then they had the late interception, which actually that was just a 3-and-out. But, you know, they basically, you know, they created opportunities for themselves late, but they also shot themselves in the foot more often than they could afford, given the fact that they gave themselves such a big hole to climb out of.
Yeah, they scored 36 points in the final quarter. There was 56 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, that was
50.
That was a fun quarter to watch.
Except, and don't be the guy who goes, "Where's the defense, fellas? Who cares? It's football." There were five turnovers. There's your defense, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's bowl season. What do you expect?
And I don't give. This is the most bizarre bowl game by far.
Yeah, I mean, especially since they were, you know, people getting injured left and right. Like Robert Ruiz had three catches, but he ended up leaving the game because of, what was it, like a knee injury of some kind?
I don't remember. I just remember people sliding and falling on their butt.
Yeah, and then Izzy Matthews scored his lone touchdown and ended up like sliding and like banging
his
elbow or something like that.
That, I think that's what I'm referring to, where he goes through and tries to navigate. But it... Okay. Also, can we not forget... I've turned on my underdog poll, but maybe I should make an amendment on there. My player for the bowl game, I put Nick Stevens. Mm-hmm. Pretty good performance. Maybe I should have gone with Olabosi Johnson.
That's true.
Seven for 265, two touchdowns. I know nobody's looking at the box score now. 38 yards per catch.
That's pretty good.
Maybe I should change that, but whatever. It's a bowl. It's where it's a bowl game. Because everybody too, like all the Aztec fans or people piled on. Ah, Rams are nothing. They're not good. But Bill Connolly does for a Football Study Hall on S&P Plus. Puts out like, here's how you played this past four games, the past six games. It wasn't the Rams number eight S&P for the final six games of the season, I believe.
It was first half versus second half of the year at a minimum, and I know that for the second half of the year,
top
10 team.
And it's hard to argue that by looking. They went, I think, 4-5-1 during that stretch because they beat it. No, they lost to Boise and then they went 4-2. But they lost to Boise by 5, they lost to Air Force by 3, both 10-win teams. And they people and also Aztec people, oh, it doesn't matter. That game doesn't matter. Aztecs are not going to be ranked because they lost that game. But it's a bowl. It's just weird. It's a bowl game. What are we going to say? You know what I mean? Put my hands up. Like, crappy surface, crappy weather, freezing cold.
Here's the silver lining. If you're a Colorado State fan, you're still kind of sore about how everything went down. Take solace in the fact that according to S&P Plus, Colorado State still rates as a top 40 team.
There you go.
So you can take that with you into the spring and into the summer. And you can take the fact that they were able to come up with big plays when they didn't necessarily need to late in the game. Like, they could have just let Idaho run away with it, but...
Yeah, you're down 41-14. Who cares?
Yeah, but they came back.
Get me to the heater on the sideline. Where's my hand warmers?
They made it entertaining, and if nothing else, that's something that you can take with you next year.
And we'll discuss everything about the Rams next year because there's a ton about them in spring football. Nick Stevens versus Colin Hill is Marvin Kenzie, not McKenzie. He's out until next year, basically. Not going to be during spring, but a lot to talk about. You got Michael Gallup. I believe he's a junior. He'll be back next year. So a lot to talk about the Rams. So let's move on to... This is the poor stretch of the bowl season. Three losses in a row. Or no, sorry. We're skipping. We want to jump to that bad Boise State game for some reason. Let's get to Christmas Eve.
Yes.
Holy Hawaii.
52-35 over Middle Tennessee State, which is, you know, nothing to shake.
Where's Robert Kekalula when you need him to call this game?
Oh, man. That would have been awesome.
I honestly thought when it was 14-0 so quickly, because I didn't watch this game live. I was doing Christmas stuff, so I started watching it late at night. I'm like, crap, 14-0. There's no way. This is ridiculous. Brent Stock still got to start for the Blue Raiders, one of the best QBs Hawaii's faced all year, probably after Davis Webb and probably one or two others, but top three at worst. Huge game, 432 yards, four TDs. They drove down the field like nothing in the first couple of possessions. And I'm like, crap, this is over. Hawaii's done.
Not quite.
They went forward on, like, the opening drive was what I was concerned about here. They go forward on 4th-and-2. Sure, why not? Oh, no, they punt it. Sorry, I'm looking at the wrong game here. I apologize. Sorry. They give it up on 4th down, but Blue Raiders scored 14 points on 6 plays. Hawaii has 6 plays and 2 punts. Mm-hmm. And, like... Because here's the thing. Like, Hawaii then, Like, here's where it gets concerning for me. They go for it. We're not going through the whole drive chart, but they're down 14-0. Here's what I wanted to look at. They had 4th-1 at the Blue Raiders 18. And we're good. We're going to go for it. They don't get it. But then here's where things turn around. Fumble, Blue Raiders, touchdown, Hawaii. Interception, touchdown, Hawaii. Punt, Middle Tennessee State, touchdown. Well, then there's the and then pick six. Hawaii scores 28 straight points.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the heck is going on?
You know what? Like, I can't remember if it was you or me that mentioned it in the preview that, you know, Hawaii needed to avoid turnovers. And, you know, give them credit. They didn't turn the ball over at all. And I believe that the plus three was the best figure that they had all year long, if I'm not mistaken.
Could be.
But, I mean, yeah, the turnovers really keyed the turnaround for them. But the other big thing was the fact that they were pretty balanced on offense, all things considered. Like, you know, Drew Brown had probably his best game of the year when it mattered the most. He was 20 of 30, 274 yards, 4 touchdowns. And on the ground, it was Deosemi St. Juice who really, you know, got it going for him. You know, he had 170 yards. Even Paul Harris in limited action had, you know, nearly 8 yards carry. So, I mean, this was a really big win for the Warriors, I think, going forward.
Yeah, they finished 7-7. And Middle Tennessee State, they're a good team. Like, Brent Stockstill's, like, a very good QB. Probably will be, I don't think he's off the NFL this year, but he'll be a guy who'll get a shot at the NFL for the way he throws and how many yards he throws. He's only a sophomore, so I don't be surprised if they win CUSA next maybe year or two with him. And then here's what also impressed me. When I was doing research for this game, and I also mentioned this when I was on with the, Bobby Kieran, who calls the games for Hawaii on his ESPN 1420. Mm-hmm. I was looking at the FAU game because Stockstill's been out. They were down to basically no quarterback and going just Wildcats. Mm-hmm. They rushed for 495 yards, 8.7 yards on the ground, 9 rushing touchdowns. Flash forward to next game. Well, yes, you have a QB who will throw the ball. Hawaii held them to just 110 total yards and 1 touchdown.
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of the most
pretty big
thing because, you know, Itavius Mathers was a guy who was really dangerous. And he didn't even get I think he had like 101 total yards of offense, which coming into the game, I wouldn't have been surprised if, you know, for his, you know, Hawaii is not the best defense, let's put it that way.
No, they're not.
If he had come away with twice that many yards, I would not have been surprised. So the fact that they were really able to hold him in check and really force Stockstill to throw the ball to catch up. You know, someone was telling me on Twitter that he didn't look like he was totally back to 100%. And, you know, based on some of the throws that he made and, you know, some of the shots that he took, especially from that Hawaii defense.
Well, and the rush factor, too. He was out, like, what, 3 games, I think, and then that's, like, almost 6 or 7 weeks?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he just practiced a week before, too, full pads.
Because I believe he was still a little bit under what his completion percentage was for the year. Like, he was just under 60%, even despite the yards and the touchdowns and everything like that. So,
and he still looked good slinging the ball, not fully healthy.
Yeah.
Like, if you could watch Middle Tennessee State football, give it a shot next year.
It's more interesting than watching Power 5 football anyway.
Yeah, thanks Clemson, Ohio State. Jeez. Or Washington, Alabama, where they just strangle you to get to death. The first half was not bad, but jeez. All right, next game. Let's get to the game we, for some reason, wanted to get to all night. Is it because we want to make fun of or cry or give KD Cannon a pat in the back or something?
Maybe, you know, talk Boise State fans off the ledge a little bit.
I don't know, man. Baylor, Boise State in the Cactus Bowl. You get a payday. You lose 31-12 where Red Zone sucked. Jeremy McNichol sucked. Brett Rippin, not bad. Defense, not very good either.
Yeah.
Katie Cannon showed up. He guaranteed a victory, 14 receptions, 226 yards, and 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you look at the box score, some of the things about this game were really interesting. Like the fact that, you know, on the whole, Boise State played a fairly clean game. They only had 3 penalties for 15 yards. Baylor had 125 yards worth of penalties and still somehow ran away with this game. And I think what it comes down to is, like you said, you know, McNichols, I think, was the guy we both expected to step up coming into this game. And he was more or less a non-factor. It was kind of like we were just talking about with Brett Stock still having to throw Middle Tennessee back into the game. Rippon kind of had to do the same thing. You know, he threw the ball 51 times and he had 300 yards, but, you know, bad Brett Rippon was still, you know, still in the pocket from time to time.
It wasn't that bad, but like the thing that surprises me the most is that, like, Baylor lost six in a row. Mm-hmm. Everything pointed to them not winning or not caring to be there. A dozen players were looking off to the NFL draft. Their all-time leading rusher decided not to play. And then they have a final game with Al Grobe there. But then, like, their last six games, I figured Boise would put up points because they lost to Texas. Here's your point total end of the year. Given up points allowed. 35, 62, 45, 42, 54, 24. They're like, I don't know, unless you're the biggest Baylor homer, I don't see how you could say they win and even win by two touchdowns.
So, I mean, what do you think is the biggest thing that went wrong for Boise in this game?
I will point to drive number, 1, 2, 3. 17 plays, mm-hmm. 57 yards, 7-minute drive, kick a field goal.
Oof.
15 plays, 56 yards, 4-minute and 8-second drive, kick a field goal inside the 10.
So wait.
13 plays, 74 yards, 5 minutes and 47 seconds. You get 4th and goal at the Baylor 5, no points. 10 plays, I'll keep going here, 39 yards. You're not that close, but fumble. I'm just saying, you get to the Baylor 25-yard line, fumble. Just saying, those are, four drives of 10 plays or more and you get 6 points?
Yeah, I'm looking at this and it says they had 5 drives of 10 plays or more.
Oh, maybe I'm not at the bottom. Maybe I go away to the bottom all the way, sorry.
So what you're saying but is,
regardless,
a different game because they got inside the boys or the Baylor 15 5 times.
Oh my goodness. And Baylor's defense isn't very good.
So are you saying it's a matter of perspective then? Like maybe it was just a little bit of an off night for Boise rather than something like terribly wrong with the team going forward?
It's always some of both. There's nothing to overly concern yourself about. I would say here's also can we talk to the competition committee and ban the fade pass?
Oh, man. Please.
Unless you have unless you're like my size, 6'4 or bigger, and you're going up against a 5'10 guy, there's no even then, you don't need to throw the fade. Just throw it 7 feet in the air and catch it. You know what I mean? That guy can't get there. But at some of both, the red zone issue, like we know red zone hasn't been amazing for Boise, but it's also never been this bad. Like, they get that close and get so few points against a team that's given up, like I said, averaging, 40-plus points allowed the past 6 weeks.
Yeah, and to that point especially, when you consider what Boise was doing in the red zone in conference play, they were scoring touchdowns nearly 80% of the time, and they ended up third in the conference behind New Mexico and Wyoming.
Okay, so even better than I thought. Okay, yeah. So very good.
On the whole, they were fine on the season. I think they ended up fifth when you include non-conference play as well. So I'm more inclined to think that maybe it was just a bad night rather than something that was like horrifically wrong. You know what I mean?
True, because Baylor showed up to play because their rush defense was 7th in the Big 12, 200 yards per game given up.
And I mean, speaking as the fan of a team that has laid multiple eggs in bowl games in recent history, I went back and I looked through like Boise State's history since jumping up to the FBS. And this was basically the worst bowl game that they've ever played. So
what about that Oregon State Hawaii bowl game?
Well, I mean, that was a little bit more competitive, I think, all things considered. And they had lost Joe Southwick for that game, if you remember.
Oh, yes. I'm having the foot on the balcony.
Yeah. So I mean, when you take everything into perspective, into context, rather, I feel like this kind of loss isn't quite as big a deal as maybe some Boise State fans think that it is. Because, you know, yes, losing by 19 isn't a good look for anybody, but they were moving the ball. They just weren't able to punch it in as regularly as they were during the season. And, you know, maybe McNichols was shut down, and that was maybe a rare occasion. But, you know, all things considered, they're going to be okay, I think.
Yeah, they're 6-2 in their last 8 bowl games, so... I think it's more of an aberration or whatever, a one-off game than... Because while they were, like I said, were shut down, they still moved... Like, you said bad, Brett Rippon showed up. He didn't play that bad. Completion percentage probably could be a tad better. And the two picks, but he moved the ball okay. But he had to throw it 51 times. It wasn't terrible, but wasn't good. But it's a... Yeah, we'll talk more about them later, because if you do running back, they'll have... New leading receiver, which will be Cedric Wilson coming in, taking over for Thomas Spurbeck. So let's get to the final bowl game. Right. If you're able to watch this, I congratulate you. It was on Twitter, so it shouldn't have been that hard.
It was also on Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook Live, it was everywhere. It just wasn't right next to the ESPNU bowl monopoly. So I was gonna apologize to San Diego State fans, but then about halfway through the second quarter started.
It was pretty much over from there.
Yeah, because South Alabama goes up 7-0. Yeah, field goal 7-3, 14-3, 21-3. I'm like, oh, here we go. But then Air Force rattled off 42 straight points.
Yeah.
Is that it? Anything else we need to say? We done?
I mean, if you want to be done, sure. What stands out to me is the fact that, you know, there was a huge imbalance in yards between the first half and the second half. Like, you know, if you look at the first half, South Alabama had them almost dead to rights. Like, on the whole, it was, you know, 276 to 208 as far as yards of total offense. But after halftime, it was a totally different story. You know, the Jaguars only had 37 yards after halftime, and Air Force had 252 yards. But what was most interesting to me is that even though the running game wasn't really getting those big chunks of yards that we were used to seeing, they were finding big plays down the field during the, you know, using the passing game, and they were able to be really balanced on the whole. In the second half, Worthman had 115 yards passing on 3 passing plays.
Yeah,
137 yards on the ground, which is really interesting because that's not the kind of balance that you usually see from Air Force. But if that's something that they can maintain going into next year, I think that makes them a very interesting team to watch.
Yeah, if they get there a little bit better, or not necessarily better, but more, because their rushing game was just okay, 253 at 4 yards a pop. Yeah. Like, they weren't running extremely well, but... Like, when they had, what's his name? Shoot. Tim Jefferson? Mm-hmm. The quarterback a while back? Yeah. Arian Worthman, similar to him, where they can both throw and run. That's where Air Force is really good, when they can actually throw the ball in the air. Like, going 7 of 10 for 207 is ridiculous. But if they go 7 of 10 for, like, 125, that's probably just as good. And then probably run for 300 yards or something. But South Alabama, they showed up, like, I was thinking about during the game, they show outside of the, I know that when they played Sun Belt play, they didn't play everybody and didn't show up very well, play great. But when they played out of conference, Mississippi State, San Diego State, they were pumped and ready to go, and that's what they were. I think Air Force just made the adjustments because Troy Calhoun is a very good coach, and they figured out, here's what we need to do, and they just went to it, and they just kind of – they scored 35 points in the second and third quarter.
Yeah, and I mean
– And that was
– And the secondary really stepped up too.
Yeah, there's one guy on Twitter, he's like – I feel a Weston Stillhammer interception coming on, and the next play is a diving pick.
A good call for him. But even,
very good call.
Beyond that, like, Dallas Davis was only 10 of 24, and he had, you know, 245 yards on those 10 completions. But, I mean, on the whole, it was pretty much one-sided, because if you look at the running game especially, like, you know, they had one guy who had 32 yards on 8 carries. You know, they had Xavier Johnson, their leading rusher, had 44 yards on just four carries.
And one was 34 yards.
Yeah. So, you know, credit to Air Force for, you know, maybe it wasn't the greatest bowl matchup. I know that we've talked about that. Our guy Dwayne Grasmick has, you know, complained about the plight that, you know, this particular bowl situation put them in. But they came out and played about as well as they played all year long.
I could see that. Yeah, this is just a weird game. Like, I thought they were going down a blink, turning back into the game. Because it was the middle of the day, so I was sort of working. I'm like, oh, wait, Air Force is back. Air Force is going to win. So I was tuned in third quarter on and watched them just kind of pull away. So out of all the bowl games, what do you think, like, was the best performance? Was it this Air Force win, or was it maybe a San Diego State chokehold to Houston in the second half?
I mean, I think when you consider the matchup, when you consider, you know, the teams that, you know, were playing, I think the easy answer is definitely San Diego State.
Yeah, it makes sense. Because especially Houston was, I would say Houston was the best opponent on this bowl schedule.
Yeah.
I would say so. Yeah, so. Okay, because somebody asked that question, so I wanted to bring that up. Also, quick basketball note here. This is about 10 minutes ago, and this is going to be over. UNLV men's basketball, last home loss by 20 or more points. I know it's basketball. November 21st, 2007 to Louisville. They are currently down, at least 10 minutes ago from this right here, 27 to Boise State.
Oof.
Just saying. Just saying. But back to football. Anything else we'd add? We've been going quite a bit here. We've gone about a requisite 1 hour. Any other notes we need to mention?
Nothing I can think of. I think we're pretty much all set.
All right, so football's essentially over, unfortunately. So here's the deal. We'll have a basketball show after this one directly. Me and Eli will be talking hoops, so we'll get a fix on that final Boise UNLV score, which does not look good at the moment. But we'll talk football, of course. So is our plan to do a year in review show maybe next week?
Yeah, we can do that.
Or do you want to break it up and maybe do like a two teams a week or something? Do you have any preference, or is that too much?
We can do it however you want. We can figure that out later.
We'll figure that out. Here's what we're going to say for sure. Next week, there'll be we'll go over Matt's top 10 list of best games in the conference. And hello, Wyoming again. Good job this year. And we'll figure it out. We'll talk about year in review stuff and all sorts of random weird stuff. There'll be draft stuff, bowl stuff. Look into next year, but that's it for tonight. Our website, mwcconnection.com, where you can find our nonsense. Oh, excuse me there, folks. Facebook, Mountain West Connection. Twitter, MWC Connection. Let's take a wager here, Matt. When do you think we'll get to 3,000 likes on our Facebook page? We are currently at... I hate how Facebook update everything to put stupid videos and photos at the top. Where are we at right now? Do you have that in front of you? I'm looking here. It doesn't say.
I do not have it in front of me.
There we go. 2,902. What will it take? When will we get to 3,000?
March 2014.
Oh, come on. That's not fair. We want that to be our next goal sooner than later. So maybe we'll bring a guest on to pump those numbers. But subscribe to the show. iTunes, Stitcher. I prefer Pocket Cast, so do all that fun stuff. Blog Talk Radio, give us a review, listen to it, tell your friends, and yeah, we'll see you next time when we're talking more football next week, and again, we'll be mixing some hoop stuff and football here, but thanks for listening, and as always, yes, we are biased against your particular team.